breakfast bar.
Yo, Pacho Man! We are brought to you by ES Sports Nutrition, Hoka One One, Polar, Oska Wellness, Velo Fix, Four Seasons Hualalai, where we'll be hosting our championship edition on Sunday, and we are airing on TriathlonWorld.com. Our next guest, Ironman World Champion, two-time Ironman 70.3 World Champion, one of the best runners in the sport now, Mr. Sebastian Kienle from Germany. How you doing, Seb?
Pretty good. I hope I could back that up with some running performance here.
Yes. Well, I'll tell you, watching the 70.3 Worlds, you and Mr. Tim Reed, that must have been really fun for you, because that was a running race, right?
Not at all. it hurt painful. It a lot. I mean, it was fun till like the last probably 1.5K.
Yes.
When I started to realize I'm probably not that much stronger than I thought, than him. So, But yeah, it's definitely one to remember, and I would rather have a fight like this for the win than take the win by 5 minutes margin. Something I will forget pretty soon afterwards. But yeah, this one is definitely a one that that I will remember, not only because Tim still has his Twitter profile pic with me in the background. You're still motivating me, Tim, with every time you're tweeting something I see you on Twitter.
I love that. So the great thing about a champion like yourself is you're always having to change, right? You're always having to adapt. You win here, and then Jan wins last year, and you have to obviously change your game a little bit. How have you changed what you do? Because last year you came out of the water, you were pretty much right there, right? You're swimming, you'd always been a little behind. Last year you weren't.
Well, I mean, the first thing is you don't necessarily change your game. You just try to make it better every year,
right?
And try to make it faster every year, that's for sure. And I mean, the one question is, could you make it faster every year? That's the thing, and that's what keeps you going as a pro athlete, is you try to make progress every year. And I mean, I fear the year where I'm not making any progress anymore. That's like the worst thing you could have when you start to going backwards, probably. It's the time when I should end my career. But yeah, guys like Jan definitely help you to stay motivated and try to improve every year. Yeah.
So when you look at this field, obviously Jan's defending champion, and you just raced against Tim Reed, who has that Twitter photo. Who else do you look at, or do you even look at the other guys? Obviously, Andreas Rehler. There's so many good guys. The men's field is incredibly deep.
Well, that's the thing. Who do you look at? I mean, it's the same talk every year, and
yes.
It's my fifth time here now in Kona, so I start to get used to it. But there are so many guys to look at, and we have some strong German competitors here, definitely, that's for sure. And you always have this like one guy that makes a kind of surprise appearance on the podium.
Yes.
But when you look at their vita and their past races, it's never a surprise. It's just probably for those who are like outside, not even the tribe media, but
right.
Yeah, so I think there are at least 15 guys who could potentially make the podium. For the win, it's a little bit less, but yeah. So we could spend like the whole AM to talk about those who potentially could make the podium.
So when you came over here, it was after winning 70.3 Worlds. And at that point, everything changed from, here's this guy who won 70.3 Worlds, and now he's going to go win Ironman. When you came over here, it was like, this is a guy who can win Ironman. Did that surprise you, that all of a sudden people were aware of you, when if you looked at your background, you'd had some great races before you won 70.3 Worlds?
It actually didn't surprise me. I think that was very well earned. I broke the 8 hours in Ross at my very first long course race.
Yes.
And I came here a 70.3 world champion. I think, of course, then you have to prove that you could actually race well in these kind of conditions. But I think I was also just lucky to had a very good first race, also with some task from the gods of the islands, with the flat tire leading the race together with Marino, and I think I take away a lot of things from my first appearance here, and so yeah.
So a lot of times people come over here and the heat seems to be a problem from them right away, but you know, finishing fourth your first time out, you seem to be able to handle the heat. Did you have a sense of that before you raced here? Had you raced anywhere that was this hot?
Actually, I wasn't quite sure because I'm always sweating like crazy, and I have to run around with a camelback all day to not die in the evening somewhere. But the races in Las Vegas have been really, really hot too.
Yes.
And coming from Vegas to here almost feel like I'm flying to the Arctic or something. Pretty much, actually. Of course, there's more humidity here, and but I think it also, my strategy coming here early always worked for me out very well. It's obviously not working out for everybody, but it seemed to be working very well for me, and so that's what I meant when I said I had the luck having a good first race in Kona, because that sort keep stays in your head, and you have to have some positive thoughts about the race here. If you start to have like a very bad first two or three attempts here, then it's gonna get tough for the next
ones. Well, when you go, you know, fourth, third, and then you win in your third time out, so your improvement was right there in front of you. When you have a race like last year, which was still a great race, and you're still in the top 10, you're still finished. I know, in your mind, no, but eighth, you've four times you've raced here, and you know, top five three times and top 10 once. What did you learn from last year's race?
It's a good question. Actually, I'm not even sure if there was something to learn from, because the mistakes haven't been made just in the race. I mean, afterwards, when you're sitting in the hotel room with the AC on, it's always easy to find mistakes you made in a race, and probably tactical decisions that have been wrong. But at the end, I have to say, the tactical decision might have been okay if I would have had the ability to actually
to execute.
Yeah, execute the, yes, the decisions I made. So at the end, it was just a lack of fitness at the end. And in this race, when you start to realize that during the race that you haven't have the fitness that's needed to fulfill your goals, then it's going south pretty quick.
So when you come away from that race, do you sort of say, okay, that race is over? And then the tough part is it's sort of the end of the season. So as you geared up for this year, did you change anything in terms of your preparation?
Yeah, pretty much. I don't want to say everything, but I had much more ability to work on the run, because I didn't have like the problems I had in the last 2 years with my Achilles, and also compared to 2015 preparation for this race, I think I just had like 2 weeks less of travel days, media appointments and stuff like that, and that just adds up. I just have like another probably 4,000-5,000 km more on the bike, and probably at least double the volume on the run, and you could definitely feel that here, that's for sure. And also, you know how complicated it is with the training. Sometimes your run could also influence your bike, but not only in a negative sense when you try to get lighter or something and improve your run,
power.
But also
yeah.
On the other hand, you know, the heart rate is like way higher on the run, and I think that was missing the missing puzzle piece probably for my bike performance in the last year, that I didn't had like this very high intensity from the running, and so I think my the intervals I did could do in the spring and during the summer, it also helped to improve my bike again and get it back where it was like probably 2 years ago.
So more intensity on the run helped your cycling?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, interesting. And how long were you dealing with that Achilles? Because that's something that's...
It's like probably 2.5 years. But I mean, it's not something that keeps me from training or something. It's I was still able to do something all the time. But it just takes time, and it's difficult to change things around. And I mean, I'm in the sport now for 25 years, and at one point it just takes its toll, right?
Sure.
And it's just something I think I have to get used to. It's part of getting older. Shit.
You're saying that to me.
Yeah, I saw you running.
That's you don't want to be seeing that.
So I think everybody has like kind of these problems, so it's just something I don't want to use as an excuse or something. It's just more like you handle that,
right?
And just another task in training, I guess.
So did you get past that? Are you still dealing with Achilles stuff, or is it just something you have to think about all the time?
I haven't dealt with it like most of the year.
Good.
This year, so yeah.
That's nice. So going into this race, what are your, do you have specific goals besides winning the race?
That's the only goal.
Winning the race.
But of course, it's the toughest goal to achieve. That's for sure.
So you got in this field. We look at Jan Frodeno, obviously what he did in Roth at the 735 and being the defending champion, but you're coming in with a Frankfurt win, and you're also coming in with that second place at 70.3 world. So you've had a great season as well. When you look at it, do you feel that you can knock off Jan Frodeno here?
I think when I would have not have this feeling, that would be a very bad way to start the race week. Of course, I have the I have the confidence in myself,
sure,
in my training, in my work, that I could do this. But nonetheless, I know how hard it is. But that makes it so attractive, right? I know it's a very tough goal, and I would rather be second in a race where Jan is racing at his very best for the win, then win the race with like 10 minutes ahead in front of everybody else.
You want the best guys on the starting line, under the
Absolutely.
Biggest spotlight.
Absolutely.
When you look at your 25 years of racing, that's amazing to me that you've been racing for 25 years. What do you look at as the most important race for you, right? A lot of times we look at it and go, obviously, it's his Ironman win. But there might have been a race that told you that, you know what, I could be really good at this sport that we don't even know about.
Of course, I think you asked me this question before,
yeah,
and probably over the time the answers might change a little bit, because you see things differently when you look in the rearview mirror. But the easy answer is definitely Kona, because
yes,
it means the most freedom when it comes to what you do afterwards, because it gives you the financial freedom and stuff to also do some experiments. But I think that race that leads me to be a professional athlete was 2006, the short course German championship.
Yes,
I won that, and I actually beat Jan Frodeno in this race. he had a very bad day. But yeah, that sort of showed me that I have the potential to compete at that level. And the next year, I turned to go to professional racing. And
yes,
I think that was pretty much the start of the career. So I consider this a very important race.
Was there a point where you thought about got involved with the whole ITU racing? And or did you feel early on that, you know what, I want to do something where without the drafting aspect of it?
The drafting aspect was probably part of it, but there were
a couple
of other aspects that probably are more behind the sidelines than with the sport itself. I love the level of freedom you have as a long course and a middle distance athlete, because I could choose my sponsors, I could choose my races, I could choose my training partners, I could choose all my training mates and camps and so
yes,
on. And you don't have this level of freedom in short course racing. You always have the federation and stuff to deal around with that. And I'm nominating myself for the World Championships. You know, there's nobody else who picks me or something like that. I pick myself, and I do that with solely based on performance. And I think nowadays I would be probably more able to deal with that sort of stuff in ITU racing. But back then, I would definitely not have been able to accept any kind of decision that would have been wrong in my mind. So I qualified in 2006 for Lausanne for the under-23 World Championships, but I wasn't taking that spot, and I raced 70.3 Wiesbaden instead the year after. And I definitely don't regret this decision.
Good move. So what would it mean? You've won one title here. What would it mean to win a second Ironman World Championship title to you?
I think I don't have to explain it yet. I think the second title would have mean even more, because, like I said, I mean, I have the feeling that a lot of guys are in the field this year that are competing at their very best right now. So they are about to peak in their career, and to take away a win in a period of time where so many athletes are probably racing in the very best shape would be awesome. And I mean, of course, it's always the outside and what I feel about it, and for me it would mean a lot to actually be able to beat Jan Frodeno at his very best, that's for sure.
I love it. Sebi, as always, thank you so much for taking so much time. A round of applause for Mr. Sebastian Kienle, Ironman World Champion, two-time Ironman 70.3 World Champion, and now, Mr. Poncho Man.
Breakfast with Bob. It's the best.
And the best TV studio in the world.
Exactly, don't you think?